you lead me there.
Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with club owner, vocalist, songwriter, and bandleader Marcus Goldhaber. We caught up with him about his new 2026 album, The Promise of You, and his life in the world of jazz. On his sixth album, it's an album split between originals and standards. Marcus was also a club owner for a few years. He created and ran Room 623 in Harlem, which was a beloved listening room, but running it meant sidelining his recording career. He closed the club a couple of years ago to return to his music full-time. Co-produced with pianist Art Hirahara, the album features a core ensemble with bassist Michael O'Brien and drummer Alvester Bolenback, saxophonist and clarinetist Jay Ratman, trumpeter Summer Camargo, and three-time Grammy-winning percussionist Kita Ogawa. We cover his start in the music, the evolution he's been through, so much more. Enjoy this interview.
I'm looking forward to getting into the new album, The Promise of You, and your world of music, so thank you for taking a minute out.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to connect.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's begin our journey with this. I always start with the COVID question. 6 years ago, it did so much to change all of us, especially musicians. How did you get through that era, and how has it changed the way that you create and do things today?
Well, funny timing on that is that about 6 months or so, maybe it was 10 months before the pandemic hit, I decided it was a fun time to open up a jazz club in Harlem. And so that was an initial part of the pursuit, and part of the initial shift was all that groundswell. And then we had to kind of figure out, well, like everyone else is thinking, what is life now? When I turned inside, the first thing that I missed the most was community and not being the, immediate, tech savvy podcast hoster, whatnot. I took some time, did a lot of writing, and I reached out to, some people who are being deeply impacted by the pandemic. And connected with that community, other musicians and whatnot, kind of behind the scenes until maybe 2021, when I finally decided, I converted a room in my house to a studio, like a lot of people did. And I decided to host a podcast that was called Mondays with Marcus. And it was it's called A Live Stream of Consciousness. And I basically had a bunch of, singers, songwriters, musicians, all different types of artists come on. And we'd spend a half hour together. They would, sing some of their stuff, and we'd even try and duet a little or whatnot, just to get a little bit behind the scenes and get that connection. So I did that for a while, and then, coming out of it, went right back into the, the club, Room 623. But I would say that, that time, that lockdown was a reset opportunity. Right. And I know it was so hard for so many. I really was grateful for the peace and quiet elements that existed here in New York. It's such a loud environment all the time. And to be able to be in a more quiet and peaceful pacing of life, as hectic and stressful as it was as well on many levels. So I think it allowed me the time to really connect with my writing process, with my own, relationships, within the community, it gave space for a deeper connection. I was very grateful for that.
Absolutely. So let's get into the new album. What was the vision? How does this album feel?
This album feels amazing, because it's a lot of arrangements and original music that I've been, crafting and developing over the past, I'd say 5 to 10 years, because when I was doing the club, that's all I had time for. And so I kept my writing going on in the background, but I didn't have time to do anything with it. And any show that I would do was sort of like just hanging on to keep my artistic soul alive. And so now that in this, post-club chapter, finally getting able to get into the recording studio back in September and work with Art Hirahara, together on this huge batch. I went to him with about 100 songs, and I said, hey, okay, here's what I want to tackle. And obviously we're not going to get 100 songs recorded. We did go in for a 3-day session and recorded a lot of music, but we had to narrow that down to about 30. And so we met every week over the past year, pretty much all of 2025, to get that list together. And so you whittle down from 100 to 30 and then 30 to 12. And then, you know, what is that story? How is it going to be told? Still paying homage to the format of the album as a storytelling device, which I still believe in as a powerful mechanism for connection through music. And so that, you know, that all takes so much time, so much care. And so when you finally, you know, are able to share it with the world, I mean, it is a birth. People talk about that all the time. And it feels exciting. It feels like a gigantic sigh. And it's really, it's only at the beginning for me, as I now have a backlog of music that's ready to start continually share.
So what are you hoping the listener gets from this album?
Joy. Joy and community. These tracks, in some way or another, speak to the idea that you are not alone, that there is community right around the corner, whether it's, you know, internally, externally, in interfamily relationships, friendships, there, or if, you know, as I always say at the show is, you know, if you're trying to reach people and you can't say if there's a busy signal anymore, those don't exist. But, you know, if you can't reach someone, or you feel like no one's picking up the phone, you come out and see a show and live music is there for you. And I wanted to put together a story that speaks to uncertainty, some fear, but partnership, always being there in some form or another, whether it's in, you know, through some of my original songs like Two at a Time or Just One More Song, or some of the standards that we chose for this album, the wistfulness of Skylark and that longing, and the courage to follow and search, and the confidence, that sort of quiet confidence in, you know, that fueled the arrangements for I'll Build a Stairway to Paradise or The Best is Yet to Come. And we deal with, you know, loneliness and rejection and all of that as well. And also, you know, how these songs and how these lyrics offer a way through that, again, to that place where you're not alone and you have someone, you know, walking along beside you.
So how did this journey begin? You're a busy man. There's a lot going on. How did this music journey begin? How did jazz become your world?
Well, you got to go back to my childhood. Growing up, every night after dinner, my mom would head over to the piano and she would play the songs of her childhood. And she would often call me over, interrupt my, you know, homework sessions, and call me over to the piano asking if I knew this song, as if, you know, all kids in the 80s, 10, 12, 15 years old, knew this popular music from the 20s, 30s, and 40s. And she always acted surprised when I would say, no, I don't know this song. And that's how I learned, Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree, If You Knew Susie, you know, You Must Have Been a Beautiful Baby, all of these earlier, some even more novelty songs, Boswell Sisters, Andrew Sisters, the early Harry James, Tommy Dorsey, Sinatra years, and combined with, you know, my love of musical theater sort of was my entrance to the catalog, to the, you know, to the canon. And, but it was the legacy that she was passing on that I found most, it was like, oh, she would tell me stories behind each song that were not, you know, necessarily connected to the song lyric or the song writing. It was where she heard them for the first time, what, you know, my grandparents were playing these songs around the house when she was a kid, and making sure that she grew up with that music. And so she was passing that along to me. So that's where I caught the bug. Fast forward a bunch of years, you know, through, you know, a whole theater degree and, you know, coming to New York as an actor, there was always something missing. And I was always ending up in the clubs after rehearsals and after the shows anyway. I was always ending up at the jam sessions or whatnot, until finally I decided that I needed to make this my path as a connection and homage to my family. And so every time I get up on stage, it's a family experience for me. And I think about, you know, the songs that my mom just grew up with, didn't even know she was growing up with, that then she made sure I was growing up with, not even thinking I would sing them someday. This was just to know them. Yeah. And so that's, you know, that's what has fueled me all along. And now the sort of icing on the cake is that about 8-9 years ago, my mom started sending me some melodies that she's been writing, and I have been, you know, putting lyrics to them. And we finally released, we released this full album May 1st, and then on May 8th, the following week, we released our first single that we co-wrote together. And so that's been a new element of the journey.
It's wonderful. So were you originally from New York?
Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo. Okay. So talk to me a little bit about the first show that you saw, live show that blew you away, that made you think, I want to do that one day.
Oh my gosh. Tony Bennett, probably. Okay. When I was a kid, I was probably about 10, 11, 12 years old. And, the intimacy and the connection that he was able to achieve through his lyric delivery, that to me, that he was able to be himself and connect with an audience through storytelling, through a lyric, and adding his personal story to it as well. That to me was always floating around the background in my mind as such a beautiful way to connect with other people. And you know, I always loved to sing, and, you know, and like I said before, my path went off into theater, and which I loved as well. And when I got here, I was very fortunate. I was working, you know, steadily. But I wasn't able to be myself on stage. You know, there are a lot of different schools of theater and how you approach a role. And there are elements of yourself that you bring to every character, whether you compartmentalize it or not. But it's not the same when I was actually able to, you know, to be myself on stage. What freedom, what bliss, and to be able to share my family stories and connect with people through these lyrics. So seeing Tony do that for the first time was deeply impactful. And I thought, oh, wow. But it didn't click until, you know, these are things that I filed that away in my 12-year-old brain.
Yeah.
And circle back to when I'm like, you know, 25, and go, oh, right, this is, you know, I can do this.
Absolutely. So what do you like the best about being a professional musician and being in the jazz community? What gets you up every day? What motivates you?
It is the community. It's the healing elements of partnership and community that bring me to the piano every day when I'm just kicking and screaming, don't have it in me, or feel like I don't know, you know, what I'm going to write. And I don't have, you know, it's like my process is that I just make myself write every day, regardless. I don't always know, but it's like going to the gym, you know, it's like, today I don't feel like it. But you just have to get to the mat and see what happens. And I think often about the community and being able to connect musically, being able to be a part of something that creates a healing moment for someone else. That's something that is precious. And the fact that we're, you know, to be a part of something intangible that then becomes tangible it's magic to me. It's humbling. It's very sacred. And so it's an honor to be a part of it. And that's like a gift that keeps on giving. And especially when I started writing as well, and starting out, it was all about the canon, the American Songbook, and finding, discovering, you know, I'm a kind of a nerd for verses and undiscovered melodies, at least for me. And, you know, I go down the rabbit hole, and so-and-so worked with so-and-so who wrote this, and it inspired that. And this is the story behind that. And so that's where I spent my sort of formative years. But then when I started being open to and realizing these melody and lyric ideas that were out there, that, you know, I feel like I could just like, oh, there's that. And there's this one. And, you know, just that process is very, it's mystifying and heart-wrenchingly challenging, but so rewarding. And again, when you get to connect with other musicians on stage and connect with the audience and take them somewhere else for the duration of your show or the duration of a song, and then they share their stories with you. When I heard that song, it made me think of when I was a child and I didn't know dot, dot, dot. And then I heard this song and it reminded me of when my, you know, grandfather took me for this trip to the candy store every whatever. That's what makes it all worthwhile. Otherwise, you're just hitting tennis balls over the court and by yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. So everyone has a perception of you, family, friends, fans, everyone on the bandstand, everyone on the business end, but you run the show. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
What a question. That's a good one. Who do I think I am? I think I'm, I'm trying to, you know, when I enter into a moment, I try and always start by listening, and I'm listening to the rhythm of that moment. Who's around me? What's around me? What are all of the contributing factors? And I try and identify what is making that moment work and spin and you know, be optimal for everyone involved. And I just try and do my part to not disrupt that rhythm and to do what I can to improve it. So, you know, I try and give to the center as much as I can. And I believe that, you know, when everyone's doing that, then, you know, we create this kind of like this waterfall that spills out over everyone involved. So
I like it. So The Promise of You is the new album. If anybody wants a copy, they want to download it, buy a copy, or see you live, any of the good business, where can they go?
They go first to marcusgoldhaber.com. That's a one-stop for everything. And from there, you can get all the short links to wherever you want to go. If you live on any particular platform, of course, you can get it on Spotify and YouTube and wherever you'd like to. Bandcamp, of course, if you'd like to purchase the physical CD or download the full album. That's the best way to support artists directly. Yeah. But you can find it anywhere. We've created a separate page for the album on my website that's at the top. It's right up there, just The Promise of You. And we did that because obviously folks aren't buying as many physical CDs these days. And so without the booklet, you miss that opportunity to give people the behind the scenes, the creation process, you know, that creative process. And so we created it digitally. It's on the website, and you get all kinds of behind the scenes footage and liner notes and stories and videos and whatnot. Lyrics, if you want to read the lyrics and all of that. So that's where they can go. And you can connect with me online anywhere too, all over the social media. I'm the one handling it all. So
right on. I will put all of those links in the show notes. Mark, it's so great to connect with you. Thank you, sir. Thank you for taking a minute out. Best of luck on the release.
Thanks so much for taking the time and for having me, Joe. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening and tuning into another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in New York, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Marcus for swinging on by the show. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube, and for everything Neon Jazz, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.